friends. Welcome to Sky House Herbs Podcast. I'm Ashley Ellenboss, a clinical herbalist, and in this space, I share my knowledge and experience with plant medicine to help you on your own journey of healing and transformation. Join me in exploring the ancient wisdom of plant spirit medicine and how it can be used to heal the body, mind, and spirit. We'll talk to experts in the field and share stories from people who've been transformed by powerful plant allies. New episodes are released each Monday, so please subscribe. And now, let's explore this mystical world of plant medicine together. Hey everyone, welcome in. Today we will be talking about a lot of things, cognition, mental health, mental cognition, and we're going to talk about mushrooms and psychedelics and the role of microdosing potentially on increasing cognition. So I'm really excited to share some research with you, share some photos of different herbs and mushrooms that I think will be helpful in thinking about how you can improve your own mental health. And before I dive into this, as always, if you wouldn't mind to just really quickly subscribe and like this video at the end if you find it helpful. Subscribing to my channel just helps other people find me. It moves me up in the algorithm. I don't know, it just does and it helps. So thank you, thank you. And I looked at my statistics and I had 153 new followers last month. So thank you. Thank you to everyone who subscribed in the last 30 days. That's so cool. It's so awesome to see things. You know, it's like, I feel like this channel is like a garden. It's like, I just keep putting in compost. I keep watering the seeds, keep putting in new content and just, it's a slow process, you know, like every month we make some progress. Every month there's some growth. So thank you all for believing in this channel and subscribing. Let's talk about the brain and let's talk about mental health, cognitive health, and what are some ways we can improve it, and especially as we age. Now, some of you might be being like, I'm not really aging because I'm 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. But the truth is we're all aging. We're all slowly dying. And I know sounds so morbid, but it's true. It's like, hey, you know what? Every day we're dying. And we should pay attention to that. Not like, you know, obviously doomsday, like let's go get depressed about it. But in the reality that everything starts to slowly decline as we age. Now, not the soul, obviously, not our deeper practices and wisdom teachings and, you know, the things that we cultivate over a lifetime, relationships, right? Like those get stronger, but the body, the brain, all the material stuff, it just slowly starts to decline. So what are we going to do, right? Like what are the things we can do to keep our brain optimized, right? To keep it functioning at a high level so that we can be one of those people that we look up to, you know, they're 80, they're 90, maybe they're 100, sitting in a chair, carrying a full conversation, knitting, walking up and down the stairs independently, right? Like I want to be those people, right? I want to have my brain health and my physical health in such a state that as I get into my elder years, I'm going to be self-sufficient and I'm going to be kind of fun to be around. I don't want to be a burden. And I also just want to have fun as long as I can. I want to be a part of the world. So I wanted to talk first about the definition of cognition because I think it's kind of interesting. Like, let's look at the definition. So cognition and cognitive health is how well you learn, think, and remember. All of these very important. And when we talk about cognitive health, there's really four main parts. One is cognition, which is thinking, learning, remembering. The other part of brain function and cognitive function is motor function. So how well is our brain connecting to our motor neurons, moving our arms, our legs, helping us with balance, right? All of that. The other is our emotional function. And that is part of our brain health. How are we able to respond to stress, to big feelings? How do we process emotions that come through us? And then fourth, our tactile function, our ability to feel things, hot and cold weather, being able to respond to a prick and say, ouch, right? So we don't have our hand on the burner for like 5 minutes looking around being like, what's that smell? Right? Like all of those are, our brain is part of keeping all of those things working really well. I was looking and doing some research on the National Institute of Health's website. They have a subcommittee called the National Institute on Aging. So I was doing some research, looking around their website, looking at like, what are the things that the National Institute of Health is saying about how do we improve and keep our cognition strong? And a lot of these are going to be obvious. You're going to be like, of course, Ashley. But it's worth saying again, because I feel like every time I hear, because I listen to a lot of podcasts too, it's like every time I hear someone stating things that I know to be true, the next time I have to do them, I've got a little bit more, like a little bit more impetus and a little more motivation to do that thing. So let's just talk about those. So the first one is diet plays a huge role in mental health and cognition. What we eat, you know, you are what you eat. And what Seven Song, one of my herbal friends, would also say is you are what you don't shit. So that'll be, we'll talk more about that when we talk about digestion and constipation. But, you know, what you eat, what you put in your body becomes you, it becomes your brain. And I've been listening to a lot of Deepak Chopra, his YouTube channel. Maybe I'll link it below. He's been talking about his new book called The Quantum Body. It's just amazing. And, you know, so much of what he talks about when it comes to mental health, emotional health, all of this is that, you know, our bodies are made out of all the things we eat. So food being absolutely important, but also it's also related to our state of consciousness, that health and health problems are related to our level and state of consciousness just as much as it is our material and our physical body. So we do, it's important. We need to eat fruits and vegetables. We need vitamins and minerals. We need protein. We need good fats, right? Like, we know these things. So when I say diet, I do mean all of those physical things, but I'm also thinking too about the non-physical, the non-localized parts of what we take in, right? Like, if you are what you see and you are what you think and you are what you hear, what else are you putting into your consciousness that is creating your physical body and your mental sphere? So, you know, this is why I really like Unfollow Fridays, like going through your Instagram or social media and being like, okay, these people or these things used to be fun. Now they trigger me. Like, this is not good for my mental health. I'm going to unfollow them, you know, or like just paying attention to what you're listening to and what you're watching on TV. You know, is it adding to your overall mental health? Good. These are good things to ask. Okay. Now, the second thing that the National Institute on Aging talked about was sleep, right? We know this. We need to get good sleep. But I talked about this in my last video on sleep and herbs for sleep. So if you're having issues with sleep, go back and listen to the video I posted last week, and you can learn a little bit more about sleep, sleep hygiene, and herbs that might be supportive for you if you're having difficulty with sleep. But we really, on average, want to get between 7 to 9 hours and trying to actually get about 8 hours of sleep. So for me, I know it takes me a little while to fall asleep. I guess, you know, you can track this on different apps and things, but you know, it can take a little while to fall asleep. So just because your head hits the pillow and you lift your head off the pillow 8 hours later, doesn't mean you got 8 hours of sleep. So you might want to factor in a little bit more time and create a rhythm. I was listening to, I really like the Huberman Lab. I don't know if you guys listen to this. I'll link this too in the comments or the description, but Andrew Huberman, who is, I think is he a Yale or Stanford teacher or professor? You know, he was saying that when you go to sleep, it's about part of the most important thing that is that they've shown in studies that correlates to healthy sleep is going to bed and waking up in plus or minus 1 hour of that set time. So for example, if your bedtime is 10 p.m., if you go to bed between 9 and 11, and you wake up, let's say you wake up at 7, and you know, then but you wake up between 6 and 8, right? Like, if you give yourself an hour on either side, but you say that's actually more important than getting the 8 hours, according to the latest research, which I thought was really interesting, because part of it is our biology and our rhythms and our sleep cycles help our brains to know what to expect and help us to actually settle into deeper sleep state. So that's important. And then exercise is the last thing, not the last thing, but one of the important things and one of the last things I'm going to talk about when it comes to the basics. We have to move our bodies, guys. Like, I know it can be hard, especially if you're working at a desk, to move your body. And it's possible to get more movement in every day. And I've been recently, I was lifting weights for about 2 years and just lifting weights 4 days a week and doing some yoga and taking walks. And I started with a new trainer, and now I'm lifting weights 4 days a week, and I'm doing 40 minutes of high intensity cardio 4 days a week. And I'll tell you what, doing 40 minutes of cardio, getting my heart rate up to 140, 150 beats per minute, and just sweating, like hardcore sweating, it feels amazing. I feel so good. My brain feels brighter. My body feels more detoxified. My skin's been looking better. I'm just like, wow, I didn't realize how important it was to like not just walk the dog, which I still love, but to actually really get your blood flowing. It is so good for your physical health, and it's really good for your mental health, because when you get that type of rigorous exercise, it also helps your brain sleep. So how about that? Let's tie all those together in things that we all know and we'll start doing more of. Now, here are some other things that the National Institutes on Aging found. And this one I thought was really interesting. We all know that we want to keep our mind active, that that's important for maintaining cognition. And they were saying that the research now shows that it's not just doing online games. Like I was like, oh, well, maybe, doing crossword puzzles and Wordle. Now, we do know that that can help. But in terms of long-term impact on overall cognitive function and memory retention, what they're now finding is that that's actually not enough. Crossword puzzles, Wordle, mind games. What's actually more advantageous for long-term brain health is learning new activities. And they use the examples in these studies of quilting and what was the other one? Quilting and like digital photography. I guess that those were two things that they did studies on. And they found that when people took on a new activity like this, that was brain and hand and environmental, that actually increased their cognitive functioning and a lot of mental markers across the board for a long period of time. And then the researchers also concluded that things like learning a new language, dancing, singing, or joining a chorus, music, theater, creative writing, all of these types of activities, which utilize a lot of different parts of the brain and often engage us in the world or in thinking about the world in a greater way, all of those seem to have even greater benefits. So if you've been like thinking about writing a book or, jumping back into your creative writing, that's going to be really good for your mental health. Get out there and, Adam and I, we've done some, what is it called? Not polka dancing. That would be really fun too. I've always wanted to polka dance. But we were doing, not waltzing. I can't remember it. But over the winter, anyway, we started just doing some like couples dance classes, which have been really fun. And then also I started playing the guitar this in the last 4 months, and that's been my brain feels like really challenged by learning guitar because there's a lot going on there. And maybe in there somewhere you're like, yeah, that's something I want to do that. That can be something that can also really help. And they've shown that all of these activities are also linked to lesser depression. So you can reduce anxiety and depression by also engaging in a new activity, learning something new. And then the last one was socializing. And there's been a lot of research on this lately, looking at the impacts of socializing on mental health, especially in regards to Alzheimer's and dementia, that when you are out, and there's something about being in a group of multiple people. It's not just going out one-on-one to dinners. That is socializing. But what they found is that it's really being out in a social environment where you're engaging in conversations about multiple things, you're having to remember certain things and then engaging again. There's something about that socializing, which, I was thinking about it. I was like, gosh, that's what humans did for, I mean, that was our world. We lived in these communal villages and we socialized, we get together. Oh, it's so-and-so's birthday. Let's meet at the pub. Or, oh, it's May Day. Let's meet at the Maypole and have merriment and talk to each other, right? There's something about coming together and then going apart and then coming together and going apart. And I feel like in the new year, this is one of my big goals for myself is I am like, I need women. I like need groups of women. If you're out there and you're a woman, I love men too, but I'm just saying, like, I noticed that for me specifically this year, I'm like, I want to be around groups of women in nature doing unstructured activities. It's like, that is my goal for 2024. So, you know, that I know it's going to do things for my mind and my body and my heart and soul that I can't get from sitting in my office recording these lovely videos, which I love to do, but there's something else, you know, it's like, we're not one-dimensional beings. We have all these different dimensional needs. So for you, it might be something different. Maybe you want to join a hiking club, or, you know, maybe for you, you want to go on. I know that they have like all these, you know, dating. If you're single, maybe you want to like do like a dating meetup group at a vineyard, or I don't know. They have all these different things. But how can you be more social? How can you engage in groups of like-minded people doing activities that you enjoy, ideally in nature, because the fresh air and the vitamin D, all of that is so good for our mental health too. So anyway, let's just hold on to that thought, because I think that's an important one. You know, finding our social happy place is going to be really important for how our brain ages over time. Okay, let's talk about some herbs and mushrooms and how these can support your own mental health and cognition. I'm going to pull up some slides that I made. I did this in the last video as well, because I feel like it can be really nice to see things as well as talk about things. So I'm going to share my screen here, and I'm going to go to slideshow. And let's go back to the first slide. So lion's mane mushroom. Let's talk about this for mental and cognitive health. This is one of my favorite mushrooms. It's beautiful. I mean, look at it. It's got these beautiful white cascading tendrils. It can be found on most continents. It's actually pretty prolific. It grows in Mexico. It grows in the U.S. There's different sort of varieties of them that grow in China, in Australia. So this hopefully is something that you can find. A lot of people wildcraft this mushroom out in the forests. So lion's mane mushroom has a ton of research that's been done, a lot of thanks to Paul Stamets and his work through Host Defense and through his mycology programs and studies, that this mushroom, not only does it kind of look like a brain in the second picture here that I've kind of, it's like a slice of this mushroom in half, but, you know, lion's mane, it really, all the research points to how it helps with neuroplasticity. And I'm not going to get into all of the science and the specific beta glucans and all of that, but what I want to say to you is that all the research is pointing to how lion's mane helps promote the growth of, helps promote the growth of neurons. And specifically, there was a study that was done that I thought was really interesting, is it showed that it helps in the hippocampal region of the brain. It helps the hippocampal neurons to have larger growth cones. So if you think of a neuron, it's kind of like a, you know, you can think of it like a cone that has all of these branches that are roots coming off. And I actually was looking at this lion's mane mushroom, this cross cut, and saying, oh my gosh, almost looks like a growth cone. And so it has, what happens when people would take lion's mane mushroom that they did in these studies, and this is about 3 grams per day for about 3 months, is they found that the neural growth cones grew. They actually got larger. There were more synaptic neurons that were forming because of this compound. So, you know, like, if that doesn't tell you something, I don't know what else to say, except for that we know, and this mushroom's been used, I mean, for thousands of years. It's called lion's mane also. I think the Latin name has something to do with its reference to a Buddhist monk. It looks almost like the cape of a Buddhist monk in meditation. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting thing too, that it's there's something related to this particular mushroom and a steadiness and awareness. And we were talking earlier about the quantum body. You know, if we're looking at things and substances that can help our awareness and our consciousness levels expand, this is the first one that comes to mind, is lion's mane as a food and as a medicine. It increases brain plasticity, neuron growth. I think there was a study that showed that it can double neuron growth, like double it. So the amount of neurons that your brain is able to grow, it will double that over time. And hey, the more neurons, the merrier, right? Like the more helpers we can get that can grab information, help us process this, synthesize it, and integrate it. Yes, please. So this, I think that makes this a really fantastic mushroom to add into our daily diet. I'm going to include some links. I am not affiliated with any of these companies. I just use them. I like them. I've done research on their ethical principles and their sourcing, and they're very high quality. So I used Host Defense Lion's Mane Extract. I'm going to hold it up in the video here if you can see. This is a tincture, so it is alcohol-based, but you can also use Host Defense also has capsules that you can buy. And I'll also include a link for a great company called Mushroom Harvest. And I have a pound here. This is reishi mushroom, but you can buy powdered lion's mane by the pound. It's very inexpensive. It's like $26 to $35. And you know, you can capsule it yourself. You can just add it into smoothies, tea, your drinks, and that's a really easy way. And I actually mix it into hot cocoa with my kids. You can sneak it in a lot of different ways as a powder. But I think this is one I would keep your eye on and would be a really nice one for you, family members, clients you might be working with who are looking to improve cognition and mental health. It also has a lot of good promising studies showing that it will help with depression and anxiety as well. So we can think about mood disorders and mood dysregulation in lion's mane as well. Let's talk about our second plant. Rather than fungi, let's talk about rosemary. Now, you might remember from Shakespeare says, you know, rosemary for remembrance. And this is something we also see in Gerard and a lot of writings from, you know, the kind of the early herbalists from Greece and kind of from the Galenic period. And we know that this plant, it grows beautifully in the Mediterranean, throughout Greece. It loves rocky, kind of stony places. I grow it in my garden, but here's a tip for you gardeners who want to grow rosemary and lavender, is dig a very deep hole and fill it with sand and rocks, because these plants do not like to have their feet wet. So they need to have really, really good drainage. So that's one really great way to make sure their roots don't get too wet. And they also, it'll prevent it from freezing too, if you have mild to moderate winters. Here in Minnesota, it's a no-go. I have to either bring it inside or just let it go. But if you live in a warmer climate, that will also help you to preserve it through more mild winters. Rosemary has tons of volatile oils that have been studied profusely. And a lot of research, again, has been shown that this plant does, in fact, improve cognition and memory. Part of it's due to the antioxidant nature of some of these compounds and these phenolics and these volatile oils. And other is just based on its scent. So here's something interesting. They showed that in a meta-analysis where they took like a you know, 100 studies of people that took rosemary extract, that it had an improvement, a significant improvement on cognitive function and outcomes, both in normal and impaired animals. So we know that, you know, for people that already maybe have some mental degradation, maybe there's, you know, early signs of Alzheimer's or dementia or just cognitive impairment, maybe stroke, that rosemary can improve cognitive function overall. maybe use this along with the lion's mane would be my that would be my suggestion. There was also a study in 2022, a study of 28 older adults, and they showed that low dose consumption of dried rosemary powder statistically improved memory speed. So this is just using it as a powder. And, you know, so if you think about, you know, if you were to use this, this is sort of, I would say not like, this was a low dose study. So if in low doses, it improves memory speed, think about at a moderate dose, what it might do. And I would think of a moderate dose as something like maybe half a teaspoon to a teaspoon of powder, or maybe 3 to 5 milliliters of a tincture. How can you get that into maybe not your diet, but just part of your supplement routine to help with memory improvement? Now, with the aroma of rosemary, this is also really interesting. There was a study of participants that were asked to perform visual processing tasks and serial subtraction tasks. And they found that as they increased the amount of the rosemary aroma in the air, the speed and accuracy that they were able to do these tasks also increased. So that just, I was thinking about this for students. Like, let's say you're preparing or studying for an exam. What if you were to have a little bit of rosemary essential oil in your pocket, or have like a little tissue with some rosemary essential oil while you're studying, and then also sniff it while you're taking the exam? And this will help with speed and accuracy, and also with memory, right? And if maybe it's, you know, if you're a teacher in a school, if you have a yoga studio where you're doing, you know, your maybe mindfulness activities, or at a retreat, even, you know, if you're a psychologist working in a mental health space, think about using aromatherapy in that way. I know I worked with a woman who worked with children with autism, and we came up with a few different blends for her to use with different kids that were suffering, you know, with different cognitive impairments. And rosemary was one that we wanted to use for sure because of how it really helps with cognition and processing. So there's a lot of different ways we can apply this, but I thought this would be a really nice one to mention. Now, the third one, we're going back to mushrooms here, is the concept of microdosing and cognitive improvement, and how I was doing some research on this and looking at microdosing. And I, what I wanted to understand was how exactly does microdosing improve cognitive function? And what I ended up finding out was that in all of the studies that were done, and a lot of the meta-analyses that were done on people who were self-reported or basically were reporting on their own microdosing experience, a lot of them, here were the top things that they mentioned, was that they had improved mood was the highest, then improved focus at 10.8%, improved creativity 9.4%, and improved energy at 7.6%. And these studies were actually replicated where they tried to take people and do like a double-blind placebo-controlled study where people don't know if they're actually taking the microdosing, you know, the entheogenic mushrooms or not. And what they found was that everyone had improved, everyone had improved creativity, improved energy, improved mood, and improved focus, whether they were on the placebo or not. And so what the researchers were pointing to was, well, the power of suggestion and the possibility of having a psychedelic experience at a low dose seems to just overall improve people's perception and people's cognition. So I thought that was kind of interesting. There was also a study that was done using low dose LSD, and they did did EEG readings using a machine for people that were doing, I would say, like microdoses of LSD, and they found that in these people, it increased brain signaling, and this had a distinct antidepressant effect. Now, this hasn't been replicated with mushrooms and low-dosing psilocybin, but I, you know, part of me, I know that they do impact similar parts of the brain. So I would not be surprised if, you know, this idea of having improved mood is also related to this part of the brain also being activated by these substances. And another thing that was really interesting that I found out was that microdosing, the use of microdosing mushrooms goes all the way back to the 1500s. There is cases of people using, exploring low doses of substances to try to see if they could have an effect, like a positive effect. So, and then it was, brought back really in the 1960s and 70s. But this is, the idea of microdosing is a very old one. And even there are a lot of, there's a study of, or a story of, I'm going to maybe get his name wrong, a Greek king, Mithridates, who did low dosing of poisons to protect himself. So he actually did microdosing of a bunch of plant poisons with high alkaloids so that if anyone ever tried to poison him, he would have resistance and he would be unpoisonable. He would have built up a tolerance to those poisons. So this idea of taking low doses of things that in higher doses can be either lethal or just be very powerful is not old. And I just wanted to bring this up because I personally know a lot of people who have had really positive experiences with microdosing and taking psilocybin mushrooms at a very low dose. And it's usually 1/10 of the standard dosing that they're taking. And specifically, the golden teacher mushroom seems to be a very gentle one that can be very a good place to start for people who are introduced in or interested in microdosing. And if you're interested, let me know and I can do a whole video on microdosing. I have done some research and have some experience with this. So if that's something you all would be interested in, I will do as share as much as I can without getting myself in trouble. So there you go. That's what I have today, and I hope you found maybe a few little morsels that you can pull from to help you think about ways to improve your own cognitive function, maybe things you can integrate into your own private practice, or maybe helping friends or family members who might be struggling with cognitive decline. Thinking about everything from the beginning of our talk, sleep, diet, exercise, socialization, trying something new, starting a new activity that engages you in the world somehow, and then maybe trying some of these mushrooms and herbs, maybe trying lion's mane and rosemary. I think those two together would be amazing. And then also considering the possibility of using something like a psychedelic mushroom in very, very low micro doses to help with neuroplasticity and regrowth of neurons. So let me know what you think. Let me know if you have any questions, any comments. I always love to hear from you. And once again, if you haven't subscribed to my channel, every subscription helps me get closer into other new enthusiasts, herb enthusiasts' eyes and in front of them. So thank you so much for that. All right, everyone, we'll stay tuned for more. And if you haven't already joined my newsletter, please hop over. I'm going to include a list to skyhouseherbs.com. I have some exciting information about my new herb course that I'm launching. And you can also jump in our Roots and Spheres course, which is going to be, which by the time you listen to this has already started, but you can join in late. So I'll include some links to classes where you can study more about herbs and mushrooms with me. So thanks, everyone, and talk to you soon.